Hi there, I'm Dan McGowan. I'm a clean comedian with a passion for raising the bar on clean comedy. This podcast is all about clean comedy, and I'll be interviewing clean comedians and entertainers, and we'll find out what makes them tick.
Or what ticks them off.
So if you want to learn more about clean comedy, stick around, because this is Just Pure Laughs. Well, our guest today is Patrick Smith. He's a local comedian here in Redding, California, and I've been getting to know him over the past, I guess, year and a half, 2 years, something like that. So, Patrick, good to have you with us. Hello.
Thanks. Hey, glad to be here, Dan.
I'm glad you can take some time to talk about your adventures in comedy. I know that you're relatively new at this, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. About a year.
About a year you've been doing comedy. Okay.
Yep.
Now, but that's not the first time you've been entertaining people, right? You have other things in your basket of goodies.
Oh, I've been doing performance arts, like improv, and just making people laugh at parties for 20 years, probably.
That's great. Now, so let me ask you, what got you interested in doing stand-up?
I did improv here in Reading for a couple of years, and I just started to think about it. The more you do something, the more you kind of get an idea of your own talent and what you can possibly do. And so I actually saw your class at RPAC, and I thought, I'm going to try that. So that's how I started doing it. I did improv for a couple of years, and a lot of people were like, hey, you're really funny. You should do more of this. And so I just decided to.
That's so cool. And yeah, so I guess the class you took with me was kind of your introduction to stand up.
Yeah. I had done one set before in my life, and it did not go well.
So what went wrong with that set? Tell us.
Probably the context. It was at my own birthday party. So it's hard to, this is one of the jokes I say is, it's hard to tell if the crowd response is sincere when it's your own birthday party. So I don't know.
Yeah. As opposed to like pity laughs.
Yeah, exactly.
Look, the guy's getting older. You know, we didn't want him to have a stroke. Let's just laugh.
I didn't bring a present, so I'm just going to laugh at his
jokes. Yeah, that's good. That's funny. Wow. So you've been at this for about a year, and now you've been getting some quality sets around town at different shows, right? Like, I know the winery shows, and I think some of the showcases and stuff like that, right?
I think so. I haven't performed in probably 3 months because I was doing some theater, but the first 6 months or so, I was just kind of dipping my toes in. I'm getting ready to get a little bit more serious about it. But so far, all my sets around town, I think, have been pretty good.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think it's great when a comedian can look honestly at their sets, honestly at what they're doing, and recognize, hey, this is working. Or even just say, hey, this isn't working, and then take steps to fix it and correct it, you know? Because I think that's the mark of a pro. When we really want to improve on what we're doing, we don't want to just show up and, I don't know, burp stuff out that might work and might not work, and we don't really care, you know? And you're somebody who I think cares about what you do in terms of your stand-up, right?
Yeah, it's almost, some of this is probably going to be stuff you taught me from the class, but the process of finding out what's good and what's not good, or what needs to be worked on or what needs to be abandoned. I find that pretty engaging. It's almost like science, and your sense of success and emotional well-being is the test subject.
Yeah, that's true. I know that you didn't learn everything you do in comedy from my class, but I appreciate you took the class. But let me ask you a question that maybe has changed over the past year or so. How do you approach, like, what's your writing format? How do you go about writing a joke and creating a joke? What's your process for that?
I'm a verbal processor, and I live alone. So I literally, it probably sounds crazy, but I just mumble. I mumble ideas out loud.
Yeah.
And when I find something that I think is worth exploring, I'll start to just kind of mumble it over and over again. And I literally just perform stuff by myself. And then I judge the performance. And if it is worth developing, in my opinion, I'll develop it. And I actually won't even write anything on paper until probably the day before I perform, because I'm just like getting it organized. Like, I've already memorized these, you know, six or seven jokes, but I'm just kind of I'll sort of lay them out, try to find if there's a segue that makes sense. Maybe there is, maybe there isn't. But mostly it's verbal, kind of verbal processing. And then I will give it to the audience and then I'll test it on my friends. And so I've learned to tell the difference between like somebody who's actually laughing at what I said and somebody who's giving me like a pity laugh.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah. That's so interesting, Patrick.
That's going to be really funny someday. Well, it's funny you talk about, if I heard you right, you say that you verbally, like you say your jokes out loud, let's say in your house or whatever. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, have you seen the movie The King of Comedy with Robert De Niro and Jerry Lewis? Do you know that movie?
No, I've never seen that.
You ought to look it up. It's older, obviously, because Lewis is long dead. But it's a great movie, and Robert De Niro plays this comedian, Rupert Pupkin. Not Pumpkin, but Pupkin, Rupert Pupkin. And he's a full-on hack, but he's trying to break into business, and there's a whole storyline there. But the way he practices his jokes is down in the basement of his house, he has a wall of like an audience all laughing. And he plays a little tape recorder of people laughing, you know, and that's how he's telling his jokes to the wall. So it's a little, it kind of borders on pathetic that he's doing that. But it sounds like you're not there. You're not at that mental state. You actually do this with a purpose. You want to hear your jokes out coming out of your mouth, out into the air, so that you can actually practice them and refine them if they need it. Am I right on that?
Correct. Yeah. I don't, definitely don't have laugh tracks playing live in my recorded in my apartment. That would be funny though. That's kind of the way I think is by verbalizing things. And so when I'm by myself, I will sort of rehearse almost like a fake, almost like the guy you're talking about from the movie, almost an imaginary set. And then I sort of judge, like, was that funny? Did I just think that was funny? Cause sometimes you don't know what's funny until you say it out loud, and then you're like, that was great, or that was, I shouldn't say that ever again.
I think that that's such a great point, because I know for myself, and I think a lot of comedians are like this, we do need to hear the joke coming out of our mouth, which is why obviously getting stage time is so valuable when it's the right kind of stage time. But sometimes all we have is us in our garage or whatever, and we need to hear the joke fall into the air around us coming out of our mouth, and then that helps us discern, like you just said, all right, I don't think that's working, you know, and or maybe that's working, but I got to test it and all that. So how do you personally come to the decision that what you're doing is working or not working? Do you have a way that you gauge that?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd say the ultimate, you know, I try to judge it myself, and I think I have a decent sense of it. Or I'll, you know, talk to my friends or strangers. And, but the ultimate authority would be, how does the audience respond? There's stuff that I thought was not that funny and the audience responded to it. And I was like, well, I'm going to hang on to that and develop it. There's other stuff that I thought was hilarious, and I have said it multiple times and just crickets
doesn't work
from the audience.
Well, somebody, I forget who it was, a pro comic has said that the audience is our, they let us know. I mean, you basically said that. The audience are the ones who let us know. And really more so than our family and friends, because like you said earlier, they want to support us. And so they'll say, attaboy, you know, and it's not the same as an audience member who has no idea who we are and we're still able to make them laugh. Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. So now I know from working with you and talking with you that you do work clean, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And tell us about that. Why? And now this podcast is about trying to promote and support clean comedy. So that's why I asked you to be on it. But so why do you, why is there any particular reason you like working clean? What are some of the things that fall into that for you?
Well, Some of it's moral. Like, I don't want to promote filth, you know?
Right.
Cause stand up comedy can get, it can get pretty, pretty bad, pretty rough.
Never. That never happens. Yeah. No, you're right. Yeah.
So some of it's moral, cause just, I want to not be gross. But on a, and I do kind of ride, I kind of ride the fence. Like I'll get up to the line and then just my conscience, I'm like, I can't, I'll have some jokes that I think are kind of funny. And then I'll get to where I'm going to perform it and be like, that's too far. I'm not doing that. But on a, on another level, I think that it's easy to peddle toilet humor.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier to do that. So clean comedy for me, that's where the real challenge is. Like, okay, am I growing as an artist or am I learning how to regurgitate, you know, fourth grade jokes that are just, you know, super, improper and filthy.
Right.
For me, the challenge is like actually in the craft of, oh, I'm making something funny that's going to resonate with people that doesn't need to rely on like toilet humor.
Yeah. You know? Well, has part of that come about? I know you said about moral, so maybe you're from your faith, but also from observations of comedians who you've liked over the years, maybe who you grew up watching or whatever. Like on television, obviously, they could not, censors wouldn't let you say stuff. So guys like us were, immersed in watching comedy that had to be written creatively and clever and witty, but free of the filth. Would you say that that's been your, I mean, are there comics that you really sort of aligned with or that you watched and observed?
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely. I would say, I mean, and there's even comics that can go a little, you know, filthier or kind of crass humor that I appreciate the parts of their act that are not that, you know, like I like, Bill Burr a whole lot. He gets really bad.
Yeah.
But I think he's got some material that is good that isn't just, it's just his angry stuff. It's not necessarily the violent kind of almost evil stuff. I like Pete Holmes a lot. He's got a lot of really good clean content. Obviously Jim Gaffigan. I mean, who doesn't like that guy?
Right. Have you seen his new special? Is it called Thin or Think Thin or something? Do you know which one I'm talking about?
I'm not sure.
It's his newest special, and the word thin is in the title. I should know it, but I don't know it off the top of my head because I guess he's lost a lot of weight. And oh, wow. Well, I don't guess. I know for sure from watching the that's not a guess. He did lose weight. And he's pretty open about it and how he went about it, and it comes out in his jokes. And it's a good special. I mean, you know, it's Gaffigan. So, like, you know what you're getting. It's you trust the content that is going to be coming forth.
Yeah.
Yeah. So working then as a clean comedian, has it been hard for you to do that, or do you find it easy? Not easy, that's not the right word, but I like the word you use, challenging. Do you find it a little bit more challenging to create and craft jokes that are in a cleaner vein? Is that what you said? It's more challenging?
I think so, yeah. Because I think it gets more into like, you've really got to focus on the art and on the writing. And you know, the delivery is always important, but I think if I have like, you know, toilet humor, I can just really like, focus on the delivery and make it really punchy and you'll get some laughs there. But I think the real art is the writing and the crafting, you know, thoughtful stuff. It hasn't been too challenging. There's some things, places I wanted to go that I had to kind of stay away from where I'm like, I'm not comfortable talking about that. Like, I think when I was in your class, actually, you gave us, I think, 5 minutes. It was before the showcase, but you gave us 5 minutes or 3 minutes to practice and do like a little practice set. And on the day I was performing, I'd practice it. One of the ladies in your class brought her kid. And I was like, all right, well, I'm not going to say that part of my routine.
Yeah. It's funny how the audience or even the venue can help dictate that for us. You know, in most bar shows and most like comedy club venues, especially nowadays, anything goes, as you know, there's this thinking out there that we're supposed to be raunchy. You know, the comedy isn't funny if it's not raunchy. And, you know, from taking the class, where I go with that is, no, comedy isn't funny if it's not funny. If all you're doing is cussing and there's no jokes in there or whatever, that's all you're doing. It's not funny at all. And my personal thing is that, I mean, that's why I started veering towards like corporate events. I've done a lot of church shows, you know, community events, things where there's going to be a wider range of ages, and where the comedy tastes tend to be more in line with where my tastes are, you know, which harken back to more classic comedy. I mean, obviously, when I was working more in the clubs, it was also back then, way back then, you know, anything goes, but it wasn't the same anything goes as we have today. You know, it's really vulgar in some places today, as you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And you're right. We do need to kind of pick and choose where we're going to agree to go perform. You know, that said, when you have an opportunity to perform someplace because you've shown yourself as a comic or whatever, we can still hold to our guns and do what we want to do. And if we have the confidence people will laugh, then that's great, you know.
Yeah, because even if the context is, it's like, this is a R-rated show. Even if the context is, or the venue is one where it's like, oh, people are going to be saying terrible things here. If you're funny, you know, you're still going to, you're going to hold your own there, you know?
I think so. I mean, that's what happened to me when I was, especially in Denver, I would be the only comedian on the show who wasn't cussing. And, you know, I guess it was a little awkward at first, but thankfully I was able to write stuff that, at least for me and the audiences that were there, they were laughing at it. And so, you know, I was quote unquote successful at doing that without having to add in the other stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So let me ask you this, over this past year as a comedian, this vast time that you've been doing this, any career highlights? Is there any shows or sets that just stick out and you thought, wow, that was amazing?
I think there's a couple. The last show I did was just where you're just on, you know, it's like this with all performing arts, but sometimes it's a struggle. Sometimes you're just like kind of holding it together, but other times it's just, you're just on. And, the last one I did, I think was like 5 months ago. Was it the post office?
Oh, you were at the post office. I didn't realize that. Mm-hmm. Great. Okay.
And it was great. I was just on, it just worked. And it was pretty challenging because that bar is split in half. And so,
yeah.
There was the bar, and on the other side of the bar was half of a noisy restaurant, and then the stage was on our half, so we had a lot of background atmosphere chatting to deal with, but the audience was pretty engaged. It was a fun show.
Now, I've never done the post office, but I think I know who runs that, and I know that show tends to get pretty adult, right?
Oh yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So you were probably standing out. You were like what I just described. You were able to bring the funny and be clever and all that, but you were in the lineup of comedians who probably were not working clean for the most part.
Oh goodness, no.
Yeah.
It was rough show. Part of my those moments. So my first show ever was like that. It was an incredibly dirty show and I didn't know anything really other than how to put a set together.
Yeah.
And so I invited a bunch of people from my church.
Yeah.
And it was terrible. I watched the life drain out of their eyes as they were listening to some of those comedians. And I wrote a lot of apology letters.
Well, yeah. And, you know, that's why I think it's important for people who produce shows to make it really clear somewhere on your flyer what to expect. And that can be as simple as you've seen people put like over 21 or over 18 or adult content or whatever, just so that you don't come in completely, you know, what's the word? Sidelined. Sure. Or is it, you know, you come in and you know, okay, probably. And if you're going to a comedy club, I think most people realize that the show is not going to be a PG kind of a show. Unless they say that. There are some clubs who will deliberately say, hey, tonight is clean night or tonight is PG-13 night or whatever. And the audience that wants that will go to that show. You know, it's like Dry Bar. Dry Bar is absolutely clean, although sometimes they get a little, like you were talking about earlier, getting a little close to the edge. But you're not going to hear any kind of swearing or cussing or, you know, sexual content jokes or anything like that because that's their brand. Their brand is a clean comedy forum, you know, platform. So, okay, well, I'm glad you did that. That's cool. So now is comedy the only thing you do or do you have a day job that pays the bill? How does your day go? What do you do?
I somehow, I'm still trying to piece together how I ended up where I am in life, but I work for an Austrian tech company.
Okay.
Doing business development. So that is what I do during the day.
And is that all online? You work online?
Yep. Fully remote team. Yeah.
Wow. Or I guess that's fully remote would have been more modern for me to say, right? Not just even online is old now to say, you know, I was going to say, did you use your computer? But then you really see, you're laughing at me. So that's okay. That's I deserve that laugh. Yeah. So that's pretty cool. So that kind of fills your time. And then when you find opportunities, you go out and perform.
Yeah. Yeah. I just got out of a show a couple months ago. I had an injury, so I had to take a break from stage stuff. But yeah, I'm on the mend and I'm ready to get back in.
Yeah. And talk a little bit about the other stuff you do. I know that you do some acting, primarily stage, right? Like theater.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And then you've also done improv.
Oh yeah. I've been doing improv for on and off for probably 20 years, but, a group just started here maybe 2.5 years ago. And so I've been practicing every week and I think we've done about 13 or 14 performances at Riverfront Theater. Over
That's
the
great.
Last couple of years.
Yeah. Now, for those who may not know about improv versus stand-up, do you have any thoughts or feelings about how those two art forms are different?
Yeah. Improv, you know, obviously, if you look at the name, it's improvised, but you kind of learn the structure of the games, and the games will have some sort of form and rules. But you won't have, there's topics that need to be added for the game to be performed. And so those topics, we won't get those until we're literally in the moment, on the stage. And it's pretty, pretty adventurous.
So it's a little, what you're describing basically for those who are familiar with the show, Whose Line Is It Anyway? It's like that, right? You get, yeah.
Correct.
And how do you feel, like, what do you think are the differences between that versus, working as a stand up?
I'm a little bit, doing stand-up feels safer to me because I'll have material that I've repeated and I've gotten, you know, a lot of, you know, active feedback from audiences, and I'll kind of know what I'm going up there with for the most part. But improv is, I don't know. You don't know what's going to happen. It's kind of this place where I step out and I'll get a topic, or I'll agree to take a certain subject on. And sometimes I have no idea what I'm going to do, and I just step out on stage and see what happens. So
That's so cool. I don't know if you've been heckled in your year of doing comedy, doing stand-up.
Yeah.
Okay. So do you feel, my question is, do you feel that because you have the skills of doing improv, that has helped you deal with hecklers?
Not yet. I haven't really, that's an area that I haven't actually, responding to hecklers comically is not something I've really done yet. I have had a few things where something from another person's set or from the audience will inspire me, and I'll come up with a funny joke just on the spot, and I'll start my set with it. So I have improvised some stuff, but I've never successfully gone to battle with a heckler quite yet.
So both with the improv and with acting, like stage acting or theater acting, you do have, actually, no, what I was going to say is not going to be true. I was going to say you have a script in both, but you don't. You have a script as an actor, and that's what gives you the safety net, so to speak, to know your lines and know the role you're doing and then deliver those with somebody else on the stage with you. Whereas in improv, you have 3, 4, 5 people on the stage at the same time, and then you get these topics, right?
Yeah, and you don't know what's going to happen. You could come up with something that could be hilarious and brilliant in the moment, but another person steps in and starts the scene and goes a different direction, and you have to abandon what you were thinking of and, you know, yes and.
Yeah, and you go along with it. Yeah, what's yes and? Tell our listeners, yes and.
Yeah, so yes and is basically it's a way that in improv comedy where you're sort of managing reason and the logic of the scene. So if I was in a scene with you, we're on a stage, and I'm like, Dan, I'm so glad that you took me out for a ride in this pontoon boat. Your obligation to maintain the credibility of the narrative would be, yes, I'm so glad you could come out. I love this boat. I just got it. It's a great way to spend a Sunday afternoon. If I said, thanks for the boat ride, and you said, We're actually at the zoo right now.
That would mess things up.
Yeah. It wouldn't make any sense, and the audience would.
Well, and what's funny about that is you and I have both seen and maybe done this ourselves. You know, sometimes in the art of in the process of joke writing, you know, you'll be writing a joke and you're going down, you know, that pontoon path with your joke, and for whatever reason, the joke starts on the pontoon but it ends at the zoo, and you're like, I don't know why I did that, and the audience. You know, we think what we did was it all worked. It was cohesive, but it's not. And the audience, like you said, lets us know. They're like, huh? How come we were in a pontoon, but now we're at the zoo? And, which is why we have to be so creative with our writing and stay on course with our writing, you know, as stand-ups. Any advice you would give newbie comedians, since you're still relatively new, but you've been at this now, somebody's just wanting to get going on this, what advice would you give them?
I would say just do it. You know, Shia LaBeouf, just do it.
Yeah.
Do it.
Yeah.
The more experience you get, you know, in the writing process, the more experience you get telling jokes to your friends or to strangers. And then ultimately, the biggest, I think, contributor to success, at least in my limited amount of time doing this, is the more you perform, the better you're going to learn the sort of landscape of how you perform and what works. And that, you know, like we said before, that's the ultimate test of what is funny material, is the audience laughing.
Yeah. What, let me ask you this. This is kind of a pointed question, but what keeps you from becoming discouraged? Like, why do you keep at this?
I think, it's, you know, it's some of it is character that I had before I came in, just understanding generally in life, sometimes you fail and that's not a reason to stop things. I think there's, when you break through that temptation to be discouraged and to shut down and quit, when you break through that, you can get some really beautiful moments. Like I was at you were at this show, actually. It was the one at the resort in.
Oh yeah.
And everybody was, it was a rough show. Everybody was tired. It was like they've been on the lake and they're eating fried shrimp and whiskey. It was like at the end of somebody's vacation. It was a very tough crowd, but I got up there and I fumbled the first, you know, reliable 7 minutes of my set. It was bad. And then I had a bit about the presidential debate and I just like pressed through the fact that nobody was laughing and tried as hard as I could. And it ended up like, I got an applause for just like one bit, and it was like, that was a beautiful moment.
Yeah.
That wouldn't have happened if I hadn't persevered. You know,
I like that a lot, because we do need to kind of press through and stick with what we're doing. I mean, like there's the famous story of Larry David, who got on early on in his stand-up career, got up onto a stage and people weren't laughing. After his first joke, he said, I don't need this, and he walked off the stage. It's like, okay, well, whatever. I mean, I think he went on to be successful, so I think it's okay. But yeah. But we do need to do that. We need to press on with stuff and find those golden moments like you're talking about, where we actually do connect with the audience and get them on our side, so to speak. And every audience is going to be different. You know, every audience brings something different to the table. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
So a couple things here. You were talking to me the other day about you got some plans in the works. You want to talk about that? Is it something you want to speak about?
Oh, you
about?
Mean for moving?
Yeah.
I'm thinking about Austin. I know they've got the pretty big, what's it, Mothership Comedy Club.
Right.
Huge, huge scene there.
Is that Joe Rogan's club? Is that him?
I don't know. I think it's Tony Hinchcliffe.
Oh, okay. All right.
But huge, huge stand-up scene there, big film scene there, just a lot more entertainment. So that's what I'm thinking about. There's a huge performing arts scene here in Reading, surprisingly large scene. But I don't think I'll ever be able to leave my comfortable corporate job to do entertainment here. So I'm looking at other places. L.A. seems a little bit
Does L.A. seem too big? Like, what do you mean when you say, too big or?
Yeah, just it's.
It's too congested or something? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, congested, film, expensive. It seems like a very kind of a bougie place, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm from LA. I mean, I was working in commercials and stuff there and some comedy there as well. But you're right. I imagine, I've never really lived there. I've visited Austin, but I've never looked into moving there. But I imagine it's not the same as L.A. And if they have, you know, a comedy scene and acting, that's right up your alley.
Yeah, just more stuff on stage. It's really, I love film. It's great, but I prefer live stuff.
Right.
But I'm also from Alabama, born and raised. So being in Texas will probably be a little bit more comfortable culturally than California.
Yeah. So it sounds like you are wanting to move in a more pro direction as a comedian. You don't want to just do this as a hobby on the side.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I could do my corporate job and entertainment stuff. I could do it simultaneously, make money doing corporate and be performing. If I'm doing that art, that's going to sustain my soul. But I want to put myself in a place where there's at least that potential, you know, to go pro and to not have a day job.
Yeah. And because you're doing it virtually at the beginning, at least, you can do that anywhere, right?
Exactly. I can go anywhere,
yeah,
just about in the world right now.
That's very exciting to me that you want to just expand what you're doing, you know, and see where those paths take you, which is pretty cool. And you are, I mean, you're a strong writer, I think. I've worked with you and seen you perform, and I appreciate the way that you craft jokes and find a way to, you know, entertain people. I think you obviously love entertaining people. That's something that's kind of wired into you, right?
Yeah, I like affirmation from strangers.
That's great. That's great. So how can people find you? Are there ways if somebody was before you move? I mean, when are you thinking this move will happen? In the next couple of months, or what are you thinking?
I'm going to Amsterdam in February.
Okay.
For work.
Yeah.
But it'll be sometime after that.
Okay. So until then, like if somebody wanted to find you to see your comedy, do you have clips online or anything like that?
I have a TikTok account, but that's something I really need to get on is to get some material to kind of do self-promotion online for sure.
Yeah. And again, if we had, I was just talking to somebody this morning about this, but if we had more venues in town, that would mean more that are doing comedy, that would be more opportunities for the comedians to get out and perform and then put a camera up, your phone or whatever, and capture some of that and then edit it into a 3 to 5 minute thing, you know, that you could, or
yep.
I guess for TikTok, it's like, what, 30 seconds?
Yeah.
A minute? Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, that would be so great. If there was
but you're on Facebook. Do you want to give that info out, or are you a little bit holding it closer to the vest?
No, it's fine. It's just my name, Patrick Smith, on Facebook and on TikTok, and my picture's on there.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Because, you know, millions of people are listening to this podcast. So, you know, you'll be inundated now with, like, you won't be able to sleep at night with ding, 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 ding. You know,
fantastic.
On your computer. any last thoughts before we wrap things up?
I don't think so. Yeah, I don't think so.
You're like what my dad used to do. Dad, you got any thoughts for me? No, not really. No, just mow the lawn.
I was going to say is work hard. Yeah. Work hard.
Yeah, work hard. Well, you do work hard, man. So this has been great, Patrick, having you with us. And I sure appreciate all your insight and wisdom. And 1 year or so he's been at this. And already he's had many opportunities. And he has great goals in mind to take this. The only way I can think to say it is to the next level. Whatever that means for you, Patrick, you're going to take it to the next level, which is cool. And I'm looking forward to seeing you a year from now. Hitting all that big comedy scene in Austin, I know maybe we'll be seeing you clips of you online. That'd be fantastic.
That'd be great. Maybe I'll abandon all my ideals in order to sign with Netflix, and you'll see me there.
No, that would be good. No, that would be good. Abandon everything and, you know, run with the world. That's a good way to go. And then you'll really have to be sending letters, apology letters to all your church friends, which would be great. Well, Patrick, it's been great having you with us. I really appreciated it. And you have a great – well, we're coming up on New Year's, I think, tomorrow.
Yep.
No, I guess Wednesday is New Year's, right? Yeah. And any goals you're setting or, is that too personal to ask?
For next year, nothing. I'm already going to the gym pretty regularly, so –
Yeah, I saw that post of you pushing weight, and it made me mad. I thought, well, I guess I should do that annual resolution too. So you're inspiring me, man.
Thanks.
Which is great. Well, Patrick, have a great rest of your day. And folks, make sure you check out Just Pure Laughs. We have a growing catalog of interviews with clean entertainers, comedians, magicians, and more. And you can find us on YouTube, on RSS, on various platforms where they, Spotify, I think you can find us. And tell your friends. We're really trying to raise the bar on clean family entertainment, even not necessarily family, but just clean comedy in general. Just comedy that's a little cleaner so that we can show the other side of the coin. So that's great. So this is Dan McGowan, and we'll see you next time on Just Pure Laughs.